It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama vows an intensification of the current strategy against the Islamic State. The president, speaking at the end of the G20 summit in Turkey Monday, said it would be a mistake to deploy ground forces to defeat Islamic State militants in Syria and Iraq, despite calls for a more forceful U.S. strategy in the wake of Friday's Paris terrorist attacks.
We have the finest military in the world, and we have the finest military minds in the world. And I've been meeting with them intensively for years now, discussing these various options. And it is not just my view, but the view of my closest military and civilian advisors, that that would be a mistake.
He said he wanted to avoid a repeat of the U.S.-led war in Iraq, where massive amounts of U.S. forces were deployed, a strategy he implied could not be sustained. But a prominent member of his own Democratic Party, Senator Dianne Feinstein, insists the IS group continues to expand and more needs to be done.
I've never been more concerned. I read the intelligence faithfully. ISIL is not contained. ISIL is expanding. They've just put out a video saying it is their intent to attack this country. And I think we have to be prepared.
She said she hopes France will pursue Article 5 and bring in NATO. It states an armed attack on one member is an attack on all. In Burundi, authorities report at least five killed Sunday in a series of shootings and explosions in the capital, Bujumbura, the latest violence believed linked to the political unrest that's gripped the East African country since President Pierre Nkurunziza launched his controversial bid for a third term. Meanwhile, a senior Burundian official has told VOA his country's government is willing to start a dialogue with the opposition following such for calls for such talks by President Obama and the UN. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, arriving in Paris Monday, declared solidarity with France after last week's shootings and suicide bombings in Paris.
Don't mistake what these attacks represent. This is not a clash of civilizations. These terrorists have declared war against all civilization.
Mr. Kerry vowed to defeat the IS group, saying, "We are on the course to do so." French President Hollande vowed to step up the offensive in Syria. In an address to both houses of the French Parliament, Mr. Hollande said Friday's acts of war were decided and planned in Syria, prepared and organized in Belgium, and perpetrated on our soil with French complicity. French authorities have detained nearly two dozen people in police raids, and officials said they've identified the suspected mastermind. Belgian Foreign Minister Didier Reynders said Monday a large-scale investigation continues.
We have now a very large scope of investigations in France, in Belgium, and in other countries. And so we will wait the results of those investigations before to take any conclusions. There are maybe some people coming from France, coming from Belgium, coming from other countries involved in those terrorist attacks. But we will wait until the end of such a lot of investigations before to express something about that.
A Belgian national of Moroccan descent, Abdelhamid Abaoud, was named as the possible lead plotter of the attacks that killed nearly 130 people. In the wake of the Paris attacks, several U.S. governors are expressing concern over plans by the Obama administration to allow 10,000 Syrian refugees to settle in the U.S. Greg Abbott is the chief executive of Texas.
The database on the Syrian side simply does not exist. As a result, to the extent any Syrian refugee is allowed into the country, we are playing the same game of risk that Europe played with regard to the individual who entered Europe, who then participated in the terroristic bombing of Paris. As governor of the state of Texas, I will not roll the dice and take the risk on allowing a few refugees in simply to expose Texans to that danger.
President Obama told a news conference in Turkey Monday Syrian refugees would only be allowed to enter the U.S. after subjecting them to rigorous screening and security. He said slamming the door on them would be a betrayal of our values. 17 Angolans accused of planning a rebellion and coup have gone on trial in Luanda. Authorities arrested the young activists in June after they met at a bookshop to discuss a book called From Dictatorship to Democracy. Their lawyer told the court Monday charges should be dropped because they broke no laws and have constitutional right to freedom of speech. At least seven people killed in Somalia's capital in a shootout between soldiers at a displaced persons camp. Witnesses say the shooting occurred Monday as people at the camp lined up to obtain food cards. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, November 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Burundian civil society leader says the civil society has a role to play in ongoing efforts to resolve the country's crisis.
As you know, opposition and the government, they are fighting for power. Civil society doesn't fight for power. Civil society represents the people.
Deogratias Nyankuru, a secretary general of ADISCO, a Burundian NGO, Zimbabwe political parties are urged to speak out against inter- and intra-party violence. South Sudan's military accuses rebel forces of ceasefire violation, and a vibrant African Catholic Church as Pope Francis prepares to make his historic visit to the continent.
The church has grown a whopping 238% in Africa since 1980 to 198 million people, according to a study released this year by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate.
That's VOA correspondent Anita Powell in Johannesburg, South Africa. The International Labour Organization reports new labour trends, and an American Muslim leader condemns the Paris terrorist attacks. Those stories plus Marco Omar's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundian civil society leader is calling on the international community to strengthen Burundian civil society groups so that they can effectively play their role as the voices of the people. Deogratias Nyankuru, Secretary General of ADISCO, a Burundian NGO, says the civil society has a major role to play in the current efforts to find an amicable solution to the country's crisis. This comes as the international community has called for an all-inclusive dialogue. Nyankuru says the civil society is needed because too often peace talks are represented by the extreme views of the government and the opposition without the voices of the people.
As you know, opposition and the government, they are fighting for power. Civil society doesn't fight for power. Civil society represents the people, represents the society. And it is very, very important to hear of a third voice. My feeling for the moment in Burundi is that we are hearing too much the voices of extremists of the two parties, and we really need a third party, a true civil society, which can be really in the middle of the two parties, a party which is representing the interest of the population and not which is defending a position in order to access to power.
Along those lines, I wanted to ask you also, since you've been living in Burundi, and we were just joking when we were talking, and I said to one of my friends there, how do you manage living there in the wake of all this violence? How do you manage it living in Burundi, Bujumbura, wherever you live? Some people say it's kind of dangerous. So I wanted you to comment on the level of violence that's going on and how do you survive living there?
Yeah, we are surviving by God. Because, no, that's true. It is true for everybody. If you visit Bujumbura during the day, you will be astonished. You will discover a town which is very peaceful, where traffic is normal, where banks are opened these days, I tell you. But then you hear that someone, that in another quarter, someone has been assassinated. But during the nights, then it is terrible. In some quarters, I don't know how they are living, honestly, because we can really say that is an urban guerrilla which is taking part in the country. There is selected assassinations. Today it can be me, and tomorrow it can be you. So let's say that we are surviving. It is God who is protecting everybody, because tomorrow it can be you, and another one, it can be another person.
Listening to you, I kind of get a feeling that the ordinary Burundian people are yearning for some kind of resolution to the crisis. They want to end.
Everybody wants an end to that crisis. People are tired of war, especially during the nights. They are in fear. They are afraid that if the situation goes on like this, there will be a lot of refugees who will need to go to other countries. And that's why it is very important to do what can be done in order to help the parties to negotiate, in order to tell them to listen to the interest of the country and not to listen to their own interest.
Deogratias Nyankuru is Secretary General of ADISCO, a Burundian NGO. He spoke with me here in our Washington studio. Human rights groups in Zimbabwe are urging political parties to speak out against inter- and intra-party violence following a weekend of violence that saw a disgruntled ruling party member murdering two colleagues in cold blood, allegedly over party positions. The alleged killer was arrested and has allegedly since committed suicide in police cells. The Zimbabwe Peace Project said in a press statement that it is concerned by the deafening silence of political party leaders, particularly the ruling ZANU-PF. Heal Zimbabwe director Rashid Mahiya says the deaths in Chitungwiza are a cause for serious concern.
We say this is a very unfortunate incident where three lives have been lost as a result of politics. We also condemn the culture that has been created where political disputes can be solved through violence. We think this in itself is evidence to the fact that violence has always been a language that has been understood as a solution to political problems and political differences within the ruling party. And the history is there, littered with a number of people that have been victimized as such. So it's unfortunate that the political elite deny that this is politically motivated when, in fact, it is actually politically motivated violence.
But how about some Mr. Mahia, who might argue that maybe Mpambwa had a psychological problem which is not related at all to politics?
While if we don't have the fine, clearer details, we think the problem that we've had is largely that the political elite, the culture that has been created over years, the culture of impunity where when people perpetrate political violence or violence against political opponents, it is glorified and dignified and celebrated as bravery. When it is done against those that are deemed inhuman, those that are deemed less human because they are either selling out the country or for whatever reason, it is celebrated. But when it takes place in-house, it is then denied and called just mere murder. But in our view, this is a clear evidence of a culture of impunity where people who have committed acts of violence to deal with political differences have been allowed over years to do so, and the law has turned a blind eye on them.
I was Heal Zimbabwe Director Rashid Mahiya speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The South Sudan military says it will report to peace monitors what it says were ceasefire violations by the armed opposition led by former Vice President Riek Machar. An army spokesman says more than 20 people were killed and scores injured in an attack on Jonglei State's Tuik East County last Friday night and a fresh attack yesterday in Unity State. Jacob Acher of VOA's South Sudan in Focus program has details from Bor, South Sudan.
Tuik East County Commissioner Dao Akoy-Jurkush says the attackers rounded Mar village about 7 p.m. Friday and began shooting at residents indiscriminately. SPLA spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre confirmed the attacks took place on Pakir Payam and accused armed opposition forces of carrying out another attack in Unity State.
22 civilians were killed, including women and children, and this is a violation from the side of the rebels. This morning, also, the rebels attacked SPLA position in Nyanzi in Unity State, and it seemed the rebels are not serious in implementing the ceasefire.
Aguirre says he has not been able to establish how many people were killed or injured during these attacks. He says the attackers' main aim was to loot villagers' properties and raid cattle. He says owners of the cattle camps managed to defend the camps. Colonel Aguirre says the SPLA will report all new ceasefire violations, including latest attacks, to international peace monitors.
We will be informing the international and regional monitors that are in the area to verify this violation, particularly the one of this morning in Nyaldi.
Meanwhile, Bour County lawmaker Kwal Bol Ayom, who represents Jale Payam in the Jonglei State Assembly, says hundreds of people are fleeing the area for fear of more attacks by cattle raiders.
Some people have run towards Bour Town through Bari Payam. So the people who are remaining there are very few by now. They fear any other attack then may take place. So this is why people are fleeing.
Bour County's Commissioner Isaac Mamerook disputed the assertion. He says it's more likely that the cattle keepers are simply searching for pastures and water for their animals.
You cannot control cattle camp. They used to move according to their expectation. They can move quickly to the west for grazing, and they can even go and spend like a week, and they can even move to another place. That thing does not mean that people are pulling out in the area.
Aguirre acknowledged that there are no SPLA forces patrolling Jale Payam, but it says military commanders in the Jonglei Base SPLA Division 8 are monitoring the area and will be able to defend the village in case of any future attacks. It says, despite the ceasefire violation, SPLA forces are committed to abiding by the peace agreement. But it says government forces will not hesitate to defend themselves if attacked. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Today's Tuesday, November 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Roman Catholic Church has enjoyed explosive growth in Africa, even as it has waned in the West. While studies attribute this growth mainly to demographics, Africa's fertility rate far outstrips Europe's. The faithful at South Africa's largest Catholic church say there are other important reasons. Viewer's Anita Powell reports from Soweto, South Africa.
This is the sound of the Catholic Church in Africa. It is strong, it is boisterous, and it is growing. The church has grown a whopping 238% in Africa since 1980 to 198 million people, according to a study released this year by the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate. That growth has eclipsed other regions, especially Europe, where the Catholic population has grown just 6% in that same time. The study attributes the huge difference mainly to fertility. Simply put, the African continent runs circles around the rest of the world in terms of population growth. But population numbers do not tell the whole story, says Father Reginald Anthony, who leads South Africa's largest Catholic church, Regina Mundi, in Soweto. The church can fit up to 7,000 people and is often crowded on Sundays.
There's an ongoing connection in Africa with the spirit world and with God. So evangelization through the gospel has simply deepened that in many cases. There's also the other side, that people are not as materialistic and secularized as the Western world. And so that means the dependence on God for sustenance, for existence, for meaning, is still very much at the heart of people in Africa.
Parish Council member Lydia Mashaba says the church also benefited from the Vatican II conference in the 1960s, which decreed, among other things, that services did not have to be in Latin. At Regina Mundi, Father Anthony speaks to the congregation in English and in isiZulu.
The Catholic Church has always been following the Vatican I, and therefore it has always been difficult for the people to follow the language. You know, it was Italian, and now that the church has opened its windows, we are drum beating, we are in Africa. It's a free spirit church.
But the youth are hungry for more. Young parishioners at Regina Mundi say they are pleased to see their ranks growing, but that they would like to see more. This is 21-year-old parishioner Tsolofelo Lehodi.
I feel like we can do better than this, but I'm really happy with what's going on right now, because people are coming through to church, unlike back then, I think. So slowly but surely, I hope we get there and just fill up churches, you know.
In a way, the African church may hamper its own success in drawing in young, free-thinking members. African Catholic leaders have questioned what they perceive to be a softening of church values, notably views on homosexuality, with South Africa's Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier accusing his liberal European peers of betraying the essence of faith. As Pope Francis prepares to make his historic visit to the continent, all Catholic eyes will be on him. And many hope that this pope, known for his upbeat message, will join his voice with Africans' joyful, hopeful, boisterous rhythms, instead of just preaching to them. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A new report finds that workers around the world are becoming more educated, but the International Labour Organization notes a better educated, higher skilled workforce is now leading to lower unemployment globally. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the launch of the report entitled Key Indicators of the Labour Market.
A survey of more than 200 countries shows a definite link between the level of education and the ability of workers to access the labor market. The data suggests a strong correlation between the level of education and national productivity levels based on workers' output. Stephen Kapsos heads the International Labor Organization's Data Productions and Analysis Unit. He says benefits achieved in productivity from a more educated workforce are essential for long-term improvements in competitiveness and broader economic development. He does, however, note a downside.
The data do not show that more educated workers automatically have a better chance of finding a job. While they're less likely to be unemployed in most high-income economies, tertiary graduates in low and lower middle-income economies are actually more likely to be among the unemployed than workers with a lower educational attainment level. So a key message here is that while a more educated global workforce enhances the potential for economies to grow and develop, this isn't an automatic process.
The report notes the number of people employed in manufacturing in high-income economies since 2000 has declined by 5.2 million, while it has grown by 195 million in middle-income countries. At the same time, it finds a substantial decline in the number of so-called working poor. It says the number of people living on less than $2 per person per day has fallen by 479 million between 2000 and 2015. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Muslim American groups have been nearly unanimous in their condemnation of the Paris attacks by ISIS. But one group, the Republican Muslim Coalition, is calling for tougher action against a group that they insist does not represent Islam. VOA's Faisal Al-Mazri spoke with Coalition's President Sabah Ahmed with Fifth Lapidus narrating.
Like most other communities across America, Muslims were shocked at the Paris terrorist attacks. Saba Ahmed is a lawyer and president of the Republican Muslim Coalition. She condemns terrorists for such atrocious acts.
They have absolutely no basis of whatsoever to be targeting innocent civilians in Western countries that are giving them refuge.
Ahmed says that despite the ferocity of the attacks on the West, groups like IS are primarily hurting other Muslims.
Muslims are the first one who are affected by the ISIS terrorism. They're murdering innocent Muslims in Syria, Iraq, you know, all over the Middle East.
And as many have pointed out, she says groups like IS are not at all representative of Islam.
They have perverted our religion, and criminals who choose to misuse religious teachings to justify their criminal actions.
Ahmed says military action, like the French government's strong response to the attacks, is necessary.
I think it's really good that they went off and did the massive campaigns in Iraq, targeting ISIS headquarters and strongholds. They have to do whatever preventive measures they can take to disrupt and destroy these networks and hopefully prevent any future atrocities.
But she says a long-term anti-terrorism plan is still needed.
We have to have a better strategy. President Obama this morning was talking about how we need to reduce their strongholds and, you know, fight them comprehensively with all of our allies.
Ahmed says it is vital to reach out to the Muslim communities in the U.S. and worldwide because, she says, they could be a tremendous resource in the global war on terrorism. For writer Faisal Al-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Rwanda host Libya in the return leg of their second round Africa 2018 FIFA World Cup qualifiers in Kigali, Rwanda, today, Tuesday. Cameroon play Niger. Republic of Congo engage Ethiopia. Ghana face Comoro Islands. Nigeria host Swaziland and Egypt tackle Chad. Elsewhere, Tunisia meet Mauritania. South Africa engage Angola. Ivory Coast faced Liberia. Burkina Faso play Benin. Algeria engage Tanzania. Mali play Botswana. Cape Verde Islands face Kenya and Senegal encounter Madagascar. In athletics, Ethiopian Amane Gobaina clocked 2 hours 27 minutes and 25 seconds to win the women's race at the Istanbul Marathon in Turkey on Sunday. Kenyan Elijah Chelimo won the men's race. In Spain, Kenyan John Mwangangi set a course record of 2 hours 6 minutes and 13 seconds at the Valencia Marathon. Namibian Beatrice Naigambo set the women's course record with a winning time of 2 hours 26 minutes and 58 seconds. In Japan, Ethiopian Atseba Beyesa clocked 2 hours 25 minutes and 44 seconds to prevail at the inaugural women's only Saitama International Marathon on Sunday. In athletics, Kenyans Geoffrey Kamoror and Agnes Tirop are nominees in the multi-terrain category for the 2015 IAAF World Athlete of the Year Award. Kamoror and Tirop were convincing winners in the men's and women's races, respectively, at the World Athletic Cross-Country Championships in Guiyang, China in March. The 9 men and 9 women nominees will be whittled down to 3 men and 3 women today, Tuesday, and tomorrow, Wednesday. Finally, in golf, defending champions Uganda begin their title defense at the East Africa Golf Challenge Cup in Kigali, Rwanda, today, Tuesday. The 5-day contest features teams from Burundi, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Rwanda. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, November 17th.
I wish to express my heartfelt condolence to the government and people of France that have lost their nationals to a barbaric terrorist attack. The perpetrators must not forget the fact that God's judgment awaits them. I am Prince John Isher from Obaniku in Obudu Catalans, Cross-Western Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A senior Burundi official says his country's government is willing to start a dialogue with the opposition following calls for such talks by U.S. President Barack Obama and the United Nations. Willy Nyamitwe, a senior advisor to Burundi's president, told VOA Central Africa Service on Monday that a dialogue could take place either inside or outside the country. He offered no other details about the possible talks. Nyamitwe said the government has already appointed a national commission for dialogue. Obama said in a video message broadcast Saturday on VOA that Burundi's leaders should take part in talks to end the country's political crisis. That is it for this Tuesday, November 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Omar, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band.
African music hits.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.